is on the radio today. So turn it up, it's time to get on with the show. On 98.7 ESPN Radio.
This is Mark Gastineau. You're listening to the Michael K. Show on 98.7 ESPN.
And a good afternoon, everybody. This is indeed the Michael K. Show. We thank you for joining us on this Wednesday. It's January 6, 2021. Michael K., Don LaGreca, Peter Rosenberg. We're apart for the next 4 hours, but we're together. We're together for these 4 hours over the radio and on TV. The other 20, that's your responsibility. I'm sure you'll handle it well. But we have a lot of stuff to talk about. The Giants had some media availability today, particularly their owner and GM, because Dave Gettleman is, in fact, staying. Shot down rumors that he wanted to retire. He said, I don't know where that came from. And John Mara said that there was enough progress. They weren't thrilled with 6-10, but there was enough progress. And what he feels in the building is a positive vibe. And it's funny. You can judge things looking through the particular prism that you want to choose to look through. And, you know, some might say 6-10 is nothing to celebrate. But when the division was won at 7-9, it's not that far off from the top of the division. So I think you have to feel good about that. And I think that the Giants, I know they won more games than they did last year. And they just have a different feel. I think that there's an adult in the room when it comes to Joe Judge. I think that if they get him more talent, he's going to be a very, very good coach.
And forget about the division and how many wins it took to win and all that stuff. How many games do you think is feasible to improve year to year when you don't make, you know, big time changes to the roster and the new coach is literally a head coach for the very first time, right? You were a 4-win team last year and you improved by 2 games. And I think if Jones had stayed healthy, maybe they could have squeezed another one out. I don't know. Could they have beaten Cleveland? Could they have beaten Baltimore? You know, would they have been more competitive against Arizona had he not been on one leg in that game? But just for sake of argument, if they were to squeeze another one out 7-9, it's difficult to improve by 3 games. That's a pretty big jump. And now it's going to be scholarships over. Scholarships over for the coach. Scholarship is certainly over for the quarterback. So if you want to be complimentary of the jump they made, if you want to say that there's a positivity in the room, then you've got to be all in for 2021. And there can't be any excuses. This has to be a playoff team next year. This has to be at least a 9-win team next year if you really believe that they took a step this year.
Now, here's John Mara, and he gave his thoughts on the season. Here's the Giant owner.
Obviously, I'm not pleased with the number of games we won. I'm disappointed that we couldn't do better than 6-10. But I do see progress in the building here. I think the quality of people that we have in the locker room has improved a great deal. I think we have some great leaders down there. I think we've established a basis for a foundation that can have continued success going forward. And I'm excited about what the future holds for this team. I think the fact that we're 5-3 over the second half of the season gives me some reason for encouragement. Also, I'm obviously disappointed we didn't make the playoffs. We had every opportunity to do that. Only had to win one more game, and we didn't get that done. But I think what I wanted to see this year was some progress and some reason for some optimism going forward. And I did see that, and that's why I'm optimistic about what we can do in the future.
See, I agree essentially what John said there, but when he brings up the 5-3, to me that's fool's gold. That's the same thing the Jets said, that they were thrilled that they were 6-2 last year in the last 8 games. I'm sorry, they were 5-3, but they lost 3 games when they had a chance to take a stranglehold on the division. They'd be in the playoffs right now if they had done that. They lost games that they should have won, and so I don't look at the 5-3 as some encouraging thing. Remember, there was a point when Mike Tannenbaum of our station said, They are going to win out. They didn't win out. They lost the next three games.
Well, I mean, you're right. Technically, that's the bottom line. But it's not like they weren't compromised. They essentially lost their quarterback. Yeah, I don't think Daniel Jones was anywhere close to what he was before the injury until maybe the last week of the season.
But you know, it's so annoying because it makes the whole Giants off season feel very Sam Darnold last season.
Oh, there's a lot of comparisons. That's a good point.
Doesn't it feel like the mono situation last year? We didn't get the full look. Let's wait and see. Hey. And the unfortunate part is what happened? We got a whole nother season, Mm-hmm. And we still don't really know.
Hey, the only difference is Gase came here having coached three seasons in Miami. So there's a little bit of a resume. But you're right. Gase in his first year goes 7-9, 6-2 in the second half of the season. So you kind of forget about the loss to Miami, the loss to Cincinnati. And we went into the second year not knowing about the coach and not quite frankly knowing about the quarterback. It's the exact same situation with the Giants. Yeah. All right, we're high on Joe Judge. We feel good about Joe Judge. But really, how is it any different? You know, they didn't really beat anybody of significance with the exception of Seattle. And that was without Daniel Jones at the quarterback. So we're going to go into next year, I'm sorry, feeling good about Judge, but not 100% knowing how good a coach he could be and not really knowing about the quarterback. It's the exact same situation.
Yeah, it's tough because they did not stand up in the second half when they should have. Yeah, they won some games and they made the last game. They were relevant until the last game. That's good. That's an improvement. But you lost three games that were winnable, and you know, maybe Daniel Jones wasn't right, but they still didn't play that well. So 5-3 to me is somewhat of a Pyrrhic victory. Oh. 5-3 allowed them to have a game, the last game of the week. The last game of the season for them be important. I get it. And they were the last team standing that didn't make the playoffs because it was until Sunday night that they knew that they were out of it. That's progress. But let's not get giddy. This team needs some improvement.
Well, the only thing I feel really good about, honestly, is the defense, and especially finding out last night that Patrick Graham signed a contract extension so they don't have to go look for another coach, because I think coaching really mattered, because this defense doesn't have... You could say Leonard Williams is special, Bradbury's special, Pro Bowl type. But otherwise, they did it with scheme. I think they did it with coaching, and I'm glad that he's coming back. Because the way that defense played in the second half, I think if they could go back in time, that defense would have been able to hold on to the Philadelphia win, would have been able to hold on to the Dallas win. They got better as the season went on. Offensively, question marks, especially with the quarterback. Especially with the coach and some of the decisions, like playing Daniel Jones in that game against Arizona. I wasn't in love with some of the decisions in the game against Cleveland, if you remember, going for it on fourth down in the red zone twice in the first half. But the defense has me excited. Just like Peter's excited about Washington's defense, on a different level, I'm excited about this defense, because I did think that was a better unit in the second half. And if they played that way in the first half, they would have been a playoff team.
Now, right before we got off the air yesterday, it was reported that Patrick Graham has signed an extension with the Giants, so he will be their defensive coordinator, and he will not pursue a head coaching job. Now, listen, I'm happy for the Giants because, as Don said, their defense was one of the real, real big positives that came out of this year. Fine. But if you're Patrick Graham, why wouldn't you want a head coaching job over continuing as a defensive coordinator? Why wouldn't you go on interviews to make yourself more in tune with how these interviews go? This doesn't make sense. I'd rather be the head coach of the worst team in the NFL, the worst organization in the NFL, than be a coordinator on a good team. It didn't make sense to me. I hope they bowled him over with money.
Well, it's probably that, and he probably read the tea leaves and saw that he wasn't going to get any of these jobs. And I really feel bad for defensive guys getting head coaching jobs in this league. You heard Steve Young when I asked, is it too much for a head coach to also be an offensive savant? He's like, no, it's working with Andy Reid. It's working in L.A. with the Rams. So I think it's difficult to get a job as a defensive coordinator anymore. It really is. And he probably figured he wasn't gonna land a job, so he's got some stability. And if he feels good about what he's doing, maybe the tide turns over the next few years and he'll be in a better situation to have his pick of a job. If the Giants progress to a championship level and the defense is the reason why, he'll get offers, he'll get jobs. But maybe he just got the idea, get the contract now, because I'm not landing any of these jobs. They're bringing Brian Schottenheimer. You're hearing his name for the first time in a long time. Why? Because he's an offensive guy. Bieniemy is an offensive guy. That's what everybody seems to want now.
I get it, but Patrick Graham has a job. They want him to stay. So, I mean, he could still have interviewed for these jobs. I think he's hurting himself by not at least interviewing for the jobs. Isn't that what the Rooney Rule's about, too? Go and interview for the jobs. Make yourself seen. So when there are jobs opening up that you want, that you're more acceptable, you're more deemed as a head coaching candidate, to step back and go, no, I'm going to stay the defensive coordinator of the New York Giants, it doesn't quite make sense to me. But, again, it's great for the Giants because Patrick Graham seems like he's a star. But he's not. I could see if he made that decision, if he was on a staff with an older coach that maybe had a year or two left, before he walked into the sunset. Joe Judge is 38 years old.
Well, maybe he doesn't think he needs the interview experience, or maybe he feels that maybe he's not ready to be a head coach yet. I don't know. I mean, I would think that everybody wants to become a head coach at some point, but he decided he feels like he's got a good defense here, and his time will come, right? Listen, Michael, he signed a contract extension. Next year, he could still go and interview for jobs. As long as it's not a lateral move, he's not violating a contract. So go get the stability in case it doesn't work out. But I mean, who knows? There might be 10 other jobs available, 10 really good jobs. And after maybe getting this team to the playoffs, he might be in a better situation.
Wait,
he might only be delaying it for a year.
Wait, how old is he again?
What's he for?
Graham?
42?
He's a little 40. Older than Judge.
So why not put together what you believe to be a special defense and do something first and get better and be in a better position to succeed at some point down the line?
Let's hear from Dave Gettleman, which Peter always loves. Where have you made strides this year, David?
First of all, the culture piece, I know it's talked about, but it's important. You have to learn how to win. You have to know how to win. And we've made progress there. The locker room is terrific. We've got great leadership. We've got a young club. And I just, I understand that. At the end of the day, we've got to continue. This is an important offseason, roster building offseason for us. And we've got some solid pieces. We've built up the lines. We've done some things. We have to continue to get good players. And part of it's getting playmakers.
That's a key, I think, that was said today by both of them, Mara and Gettleman. They need playmakers. I don't think they have the star wide receiver they need. You hope that Saquon Barkley comes back and he's 100%. Mara said, I want him to be a Giant for a long time. So they're going to have to make a decision with him when it comes to contracts as well. But I think a quarterback becomes better. I mean, we're all those that back Sam Darnold. We say, well, he's never really had the structure, the system, or the players that would make him the great quarterback that he should be. Well, Daniel Jones could say the same thing, although I will tell you this. Daniel Jones has way more weapons than Sam Darnold has ever had. Way more, even without Saquon.
True, but, Golden Tate's probably not coming back, right? Ingram's got to hold on to the damn ball. I don't care. He could be a pro bowler. He could be dynamic. He can break a 70-yard touchdown catch at the blink of an eye. I saw way too many drops, and drops that were, deflections to interceptions, killer drops on third and down. Listen, they're in the playoffs if he holds on to the ball against Philadelphia. That clinches the game. It's right in his hands. Perfect throw from Daniel Jones in week 7. They get the ball. They get a fresh set of downs, Peter. They run out the clock. They beat Philly. They're in the playoffs. He cost them a playoff spot. So we can talk up these weapons, and they're way better than the Jets' weapons were, but they've got to improve in that area. Goldman's a nice running back, but how many times did he fumble the ball on Sunday? Hey, they could have lost. Think about how that loss would have looked had the Dallas Cowboys recovered that ball and then scored a touchdown and won the game. And it was only by pure fluke that he recovered it. He was sitting on the ball. So these weapons are nice, Michael, but they've got to improve.
They do have to improve it. It's funny because both of these teams, the Giants are further along than the Jets. Jets don't even have a head coach right now, but they do have some things in place. Now, the Jets today have announced that they completed an interview with Eric Bieniemy for their head coaching vacancy. I don't think they're going to make any quick moves at all. You heard Joe Douglas on our show, where Joe Douglas essentially said, I want to get information. I think that's smart. Now, you don't want to lose out on people and drag your feet. And if there's somebody you love, you grab that person and sign them. But the more people you interview from the more organizations that they work in, the more information you get, and you get how people think of your players. And I think that's invaluable, absolutely invaluable. So Bieniemy's the first guy. You're talking to a guy that has a Super Bowl ring on his finger as an offensive coordinator. The thing that worries me about Bieniemy, I don't know if you guys feel the same way, he's not calling the plays. And it's always hard to delineate, well, who gets the credit there? Andy Reid calls the plays. Eric Bieniemy is a quote-unquote offensive coordinator, but the guy calling the plays to me is the offensive coordinator. Bieniemy could work during the week with the players. I get all that. Install the offense. I get all that. But your value as an offensive coordinator, an offensive genius, is whether or not you call plays. Andy Reid calls every play for the Kansas City Chiefs.
Right, but Andy Reid's going to the Hall of Fame. So it's not like somebody's calling the plays who's like a first-time head coach. I mean, Andy Reid's a Hall of Fame head coach. So he's allowing someone that's way further along, way better at what almost anybody does, to call those plays. I think he's perfectly capable of doing that. But when you have got Andy Reid as your head coach, you know, who's calling the plays?
I'm not blaming Andy Reid, but we know that Bieniemy's not.
Right.
So, I mean, that's a negative on his resume. Now, you have to see through it. Would he be able to call the plays? Is he in lockstep with Andy Reid? And Andy Reid's the guy, because he's an offensive genius, he's going to do it. But I think the Jets are going to take their time, and it seems like Bieniemy is the guy that everybody seems like they want. But I don't think that you have to go the route of what everybody wants. You just don't have to do that. You just don't have to do that. Now, we had an interesting discussion in the morning on our station, and it started with DCR and then went to Keyshawn's show. And they started this discussion, I think, is a pretty interesting one. Darnold or Jones? And they're a national show. They took calls around the country. And from what I'm told, Darnold, far and away, got the yeses from people. But here's Keyshawn Johnson talking about that.
I'm going with Sam Darnold, man. I got to do it because I've seen enough of his ability, whether it was in college and his spots at times in the NFL, where I like some of the things from an athletic standpoint that he brings to the table. You don't need an offensive coach or a defensive coach. You need a CEO type. Christopher Johnson, who is acting as the Jets, I don't know, CEO and running the program and doing all the thing. I said acting. He said as such that they need somebody that can see everything. For me, that's important because I honestly think that whatever it is that's broke with Sam, you can fix with the right person. And I point to a lot of things. I point to a guy like a Jim Harbaugh, somebody that's been talking about taking over for the Jets for a long time now.
I got to tell you, you know, as the three of us talk show hosts, we're supposed to have the answers, we're supposed to give those hard opinions, whatever. I don't know who's better. I don't know. I haven't been blown away by either of them. And so, none of them have given me a moment like the Chargers quarterback has given me. None of them have on a consistent basis. I'm befuddled by it. I don't have a clue.
I'm frustrated because I was sure that what we were seeing with Daniel Jones was the beginning of the real deal. And I thought he made it clearer than Sam did. And then all of a sudden, we started noticing how much Daniel Jones put the ball on the ground. Then this year, he doesn't put the ball on the ground as much, but he's hurt a lot. And when he's immobile, he's ineffective. And all of a sudden, I find myself stuck totally in the middle of where I almost have a belief. Like, for example, I sort of believe that if Sam Darnold was on the Giants might have been slightly better than they were with Jones. I don't know why I have that belief. Maybe it's the fact that we've seen such a terribly coached Jets team, so it makes you think maybe Sam has more. But the bottom line is it's very hard to differentiate between these two guys.
Michael, you can't find anybody really to say a bad thing about Sam.
But Keyshawn's over the top with USC connection. I mean, he's never wavered on Sam.
Keyshawn went to USC, so he's probably a little biased about it, right? But they took the poll, and the most of the people were take Sam over Daniel, because I think the two things in play here. Sam was a higher prospect than Jones was, right? One was taken 3, one was taken 6, but Jones was surprisingly taken at 6, where Sam was somebody that before Baker Mayfield made that late run, everybody thought that he was going to be the first quarterback taken in that draft. So there's that bias of, we saw him in college. We didn't see Daniel Jones. I didn't watch Duke football. Yeah, but I certainly watched USC. Jet fans were scouting him that year because they were watching his games on television because they knew Sam. They knew that he was going to be their pick. So there's that bias there, and you can't ignore it. He was poorly coached. His 3 years in this league, he was poorly coached by an offensive coordinator who's not even in the league anymore his first 2 years, and this muck that they went through in 2020. So how are you supposed to emerge and look great when you've got that poor coaching?
You said this a lot, and it's hard to make a definitive argument for or against. But we've had people like Steve Young say you have to rise above. I mean, there have been Andrew Luck is the guy that everybody points to where they say he is one of the best players to ever come out of college. He was a can't miss. All right, Andrew Luck had no offensive line for years. In fact, that's what drove him out of the league, because he got hit so much and got hurt. And he still was great. And he still, the greatness shone through. Have we seen greatness shown through despite everything that's been thrown at Sam? No, we have not. We've seen glimmers every now and then where it gets you excited. He makes too many mistakes, especially as a third-year guy. Andrew Luck had just as much negative as Sam Darnold, and still his greatness shone through.
Well, but I understand. I think what Steve Young is saying is that you can't just always use it as an excuse. I mean, eventually you're going to have to play through it, because you can't just expect coaches to get fired all the time and you continue to get contract extensions. But what I would ask Steve Young, and we can have him on again, you know, did he not become a better quarterback when he went to San Francisco as opposed to when he was in Tampa?
But you still saw he was great in Tampa.
But he wasn't great in Tampa. I'm looking at the statistics now.
But have you seen greatness with Sam? I mean, what was he, 10 touchdowns, 11 interceptions this year? I might be wrong, but I know he had more interceptions than touchdowns.
Right. But there were moments. You see, but Peter, didn't you see like moments of athleticism, big throws on occasion?
Again, Sam?
Yeah.
Well, of course. There were not only that, Don, there were also a lot of underrated, just competent, solid drives from Sam in which it didn't amount to anything because either they ended up losing the game badly. Wasn't there a stat? The Jets scored on their opening drive like 8 straight games.
8 straight games, which I think is the most of any team during the course of the year.
So they obviously, right. Adam Gase is only capable of game planning for one drive, and Sam was capable of executing that drive right. every week.
The scripted plays. I think when they scripted the plays, practiced those plays, everything was great. And then when they were left to their own devices, neither of them were able to do it. Now, listen, I'm not telling you Sam Darnold is Steve Young in hiding. I'm just saying we're talking about comparing Jones to Darnold. And I just think there's no comparison as far as how the two have been coached. Because even though Shermer was not a great head coach, he was supposed to be a quarterback whisperer, right? And he did get a job in Denver right after he was fired by the Giants. So it wasn't like he was incompetent on the offensive side of the ball. He just wasn't a good head coach. Now you bring in Garrett, and you saw him play a little bit better than he did the year before. But Darnold has not been coached well. I don't know if he'll ever become Justin Herbert. I don't know if he'll ever be Joe Burrows, but I think he could be much better than he is right now and certainly can be their quarterback moving forward if they choose to, if they bring in the right coach. Because you're right, Michael, I can't definitively say because nothing's popped out of our head here from what we've seen, but you can't deny the fact that he's been poorly, poorly, poorly coached in his 3 years in the NFL.
Yeah, but I think we got a clue yesterday. I don't think he's coming back with the Jets. I mean, we could talk till we're blue in the face. The fact that there's money involved, that they're going to have to give him a big contract to stay, and if you draft a quarterback, you have him for 5 years at a very low price, meaning that you could bring in other skill position players. That's how teams get great. Right. That's why the Seahawks won a Super Bowl and got to another Super Bowl, because Russell Wilson wasn't making money. But Sam Darnold's going to have to start making money after next year.
No, and I think that was revealing when we had Joe Douglas on, that he's like, good point, Michael, about the money. I mean, that's the quintessential point. That's it. That's the point, is that even if you believe in him, do you believe in him to the tune of $25 million? Now, they've got a lot of cap space, so they can give it to him if they want to and not come at the expense of filling other holes. And if they go hire a coach, what if Eric Bieniemy comes in and says, I'm a big Darnold fan, I want to keep him? Does his vote count? I would think
it
would.
Yes, of course it does.
And what if he says, I got to tell you, I've been watching a lot of film, and I don't know if Justin Fields is the guy. I mean, you got to listen to the coach. So Douglas will have a say, and obviously the coach will have a say. But it's not. I don't think it's the end of the world if they decided to keep him. But that $25 million is definitely a high price to pay.
1-800-919-3776. So a lot of stuff to talk about as they're trying to sort things out with the Giants and the Jets as they move forward. We'll let you talk about this as well. Chris Canty at 4 o'clock. It's Kay LaGreca-Rosenberg and you right here on Yes and 98.7 ESPN.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Hey, buddy, hey.
Catch the show on demand wherever you want. Just subscribe to us wherever you get your podcasts.
Listen, nobody has told me to say this. Don and Peter haven't. I'm just going to say it. I almost feel silly talking about the Jets and the Giants when everyone within the sound of my voice knows exactly what's going on in our country right now. and in the Capitol building in Washington, D.C. But I will explain to you, we are not tone deaf. We are not blind to what's at stake that's going on right now in Washington, D.C., our nation's capital. Our job is to talk about sports. So if our loyal listeners and viewers feel that there are more important things going on that they have to be kept abreast of, I get it. Go do it. We will not be upset. We'll give up the rating for the day. But what we will serve until 7 o'clock is a respite for those that want to get away from the stark reality of the world today. That's what we're here for. We are not ignoring it. We are not insensitive to it. In fact, I'll be totally honest. It's incredibly difficult for me to concentrate. But I have a job to do, and I will do that job. And if you choose to stay with us, we will entertain you the best way we can. And again, I reiterate, if you don't choose to stay with us and you feel there are more important things going on that you should be involved with, I get it. I support it. I almost endorse it. But for those that don't want to hear the noise and they want to block it out and they want to get away, we're here for you for that. We always say we're the candy store, the toy store. Today it feels so trivial with the enormity of what's happening. But we're here for you for that. But because we're talking about the Giants and the Jets and Sam Darnold and Daniel Jones, we know what's going on. We're not blind to it. We're not deaf to it. We know how important what's going on is and how unimportant this is in the scope of our lives. But we're here to try to take that away for you. Am I right, guys? I think you'd both agree.
Listen, we do what we do, right? So you've got plenty of options on what you want to do, but we're sports people, and we talk sports. And for the people that want a check out for a second and just kind of forget about what's happening in the world, we're here for you.
Hey, listen, I have a morning show vehicle in which I can express my feelings on this, and I'm sure I will be tomorrow morning. And then I have this one where, you know, fortunately for us, at least if we're trying to distract ourselves, we have two very interesting football teams in terms of their situation this offseason, and an exciting NFL playoff getting going. And by the way, a couple of basketball teams that are worth paying attention to. So at least there's stuff to talk about to help us get away from this, because it is a truly sad and low point today for this nation.
All right, that's out of the way. We do want you to know, while they're sitting here talking about sports and having a good time, that's what we do.
This is not some statement that what we think is we're doing right now is more important than what's going on in the world. No, we're just doing our job.
Right. What we're doing is trivial.
Yeah.
And what's going on south of us is certainly not trivial.
By the way, we should also give a shout-out. I know we'll probably get to them some later, but shout-out to the Nets with a good win last night in what is a tough spot for them, down Dinwiddie and KD. Kyrie stepped up big. They got a big win last night.
Yeah, that was amazing. I mean, the Jazz were a good team, and they completely pounded them. The Knicks play tonight, so we'll have that game on 98.7. Again, more opportunities for you to come into the toy store on a day that I think you might want to do that. Let's go to the phones. 1-800-919-3776. Let's go to Frank. I don't know where that Chetnango. Frank, where are you from?
Yeah, Chetnango.
Where is that?
It's outside Syracuse, New York.
Oh, okay. Never heard of it. Well, welcome aboard, Frank.
Yeah. First time caller, man. What's going on, guys?
Not too much.
Hey, I just wanted to talk about. I don't get why Don thinks that this Sam Darnold is so good. I mean, I don't see it in the guy. I really don't.
Well,
I mean, he looks like he's dazed and confused out there.
Well, there's no question. I mean, last year he was against New England. But listen, am I a quarterback whisperer? Am I a professional evaluator of quarterbacks? But I listen to people. You can't find anybody in the business, Frank, seriously, whether it's Dan Orlovsky, whether it's Keyshawn Johnson, whether it's Todd McShay. Like, they all still seem to believe that he is a good quarterback that's being masked right now by bad coaching. And we have to agree, Frank, he's been poorly coached. Can we agree on that?
Oh yeah, absolutely.
All right,
and so I'm a big Giants fan, but they brought Flacco when he played better than Sam Darnold did. It wasn't even close.
I mean, you could say you can't say it wasn't even close. I mean, there was a pick six that cost him a game, and you're also talking about at least an experienced quarterback that won a Super Bowl, but. Hey, I don't know how good he is, but there are people that get paid to know that are telling me that he's still good. I know he's been poorly coached. In his rookie year, in the final four games of the season, he had the highest quarterback rating of any quarterback in the NFL, right? He's had injuries. He's shown moments. I'm not going to apologize for the way that he's played, and I'm certainly not going to tell you that he is going to be the next, Dan Marino. But I think there's still enough there to kind of wait and see. And if it turns out that they trade that pick and they go into next year with Sam Darnold as the quarterback with the right coach, I think you will see a better quarterback.
All right. Now, I have a perfect example, though, to throw at Don. Who has had worse coaching and organizational instability than Deshaun Watson? The legitimate star. Now, he's had weapons, but bad coaching and a bad culture.
Well, he's down a weapon this year.
Right, because of ineptitude,
right,
incompetency,
and they won four games because of that. But he's also
he still was great.
But you know how good he is.
But he's also a physical specimen that's able to do a lot of things.
Sam was in the third pick in the draft, Don. He should be a physical specimen.
I mean, we saw on the best play Sam had this year. Sam could he's not Deshaun, but Sam could take off and go. Sam's got a big arm. I don't know that he deserves the excuses of Deshaun is somehow better than him. Yeah, he's better because he plays better, but does Sam not have an incredible tool set? He's the quarterback. He's a star quarterback at USC,
drafted
highly, who's shown in moments that he can be special.
I can't tell you how much I watched Houston this year. What were his stats? I mean, they were a lousy team, and
they were great.
Reason for that.
I mean, you show that video from NFL Films. He's walking off the field the last game with J.J. Watt, and J.J. Watt apologized to him.
Mm.
We wasted a career. We wasted a year of your life.
That's how great
this guy is.
By the way, is J.J. Watt not just the best?
He's pretty special.
From his speech last week, where he just cut like a straight-up WWE Hall of Fame promo about how sickened he was, to then seeing him. You know, I at first when I saw the clip, I wondered who was apologizing to who. You know, because I thought, oh, well, Deshaun might have been apologizing for wasting a late year of J.J.'s career. No, it was J.J. apologizing to Deshaun. He's just a high-level guy.
And just think about how coaching matters. You can make the case they've had the best defensive player over the last, few years in Houston. They've got a quarterback that's probably in the conversation of one of the five or six quarterbacks in the league and can't win because they just didn't have any coaching.
Let's go to Anthony in Staten Island. Anthony. Anthony.
You guys there?
Yeah. How you doing,
guys?
Good. How you doing?
You guys want to cry me a river about your Jets and the Giants?
About what? Who's crying about the Jets and the Giants?
Cry me a river. Because you got the real New York team deciding with the Bills.
Well, nobody's crying about the Jets and the Giants.
I'm glad you guys didn't take Josh Allen because you would have ruined his career.
Oh, hey, Anthony, God. I just said the other day.
They're the best team in football.
They're the best team in football right now.
Relax.
I heard what you said down the other day.
So, what did he say?
He heard what you said the other day.
I heard what you said the other day.
So be happy.
So, stream Buffalo Radio. What do you want us to do? I mean, you've got a computer. Stream Buffalo Radio, and they'll talk about the Bills. They're not a local team, so they can't really talk about them as much.
But Anthony, nobody's crying about the Jets and the Giants. We're saying what they have to do. That's not crying about them, bud. Just because you're feeling good about the Bills, you should have. You're a Bills fan, but that's a silly phone call, buddy. Cry me a river about the Giants. Cry me a river.
By the way, I'm gonna do something that's going to be crazy. This is going to bring me together with my Giants fans. Do me a favor and just call me after the Bills catch up to the Giants in Super Bowls. If you could call me after that one. Because if I recall, our entire division basically swept you in the Super Bowl. So let's simmer down now, Buffalo.
Now listen, they got to win a title. Catch up with the Jets.
Catch up with the Jets first.
No, but I don't want to bash the Bills. But again, I am not going to sit here and have a conversation with people about how they're a New York team and we've got to talk about them. Do you think, Michael, after the Dodgers are eliminated from playoff contention, that the L.A. radio station starts talking about the San Francisco Giants? They're in California. They're in the same state. No, because they're not in the same market. The Bills are not in the New York market. They might have New York because it's New York State. But when they say New York Giants and they say New York Jets, they're talking about the city and the region, not the state as much. Okay? So the Bills are in Buffalo. They've got a nice market up there. They've got quality sports radio. They'll talk Sabres and Bills to your heart's content. Stream it, and you'll get all you need. But we're not going to make the Bills.
Stream it dead.
We're not going to make the Bills into a local team. And their fans drive me up a wall, Peter. Talk about insecurity. They've got the best team in football, and all they do is complain. You don't talk about us enough. You don't give us any respect. My God, there is something about the small market syndrome, isn't there? Because you see it in Philly, you saw it in Boston for years. All of these cities that are so close to New York have this inferiority complex that their teams just aren't as good as the big, bad New York City. And when they finally are big and bad and better, all they do is complain. You don't talk about it. You don't give us any respect. The Bills are the best team in football right now. I'll be honest with you. I think they're going to the Super Bowl.
They're not better than Kansas City.
I think they are.
I do, too.
I think they're better defensively, and I think offensively right now they're clicking. Have you seen Kansas City lately? Forget about the game they played against the Chargers. They mailed it in.
How about Atlanta a couple weeks before that? They don't generate points the same way.
Do you realize they have not covered a spread since the Jet game?
Andrew, you remember.
But they don't care about covering the spread.
No, but what I'm saying is that their offense, so you think that they're just trying to get by? I'm not saying they're not a great team, and I wouldn't be shocked if they went to the Super Bowl. But the combination of it, how difficult it is to repeat, and the fact that over the last couple of months, they just have not really seemed nearly as good as Buffalo has. Didn't have to play hard in that final game. Buffalo's been beating the crap out of people the last few weeks.
Can I just throw you? I'm going to throw some numbers at you going backwards, starting from this week. Here are the Bills' offensive totals: 56, 38, 48, 26, 34, 27, 32, 44. I'm telling you, they're 98 Vikings a chase right now. They're smoking. And Kansas City, every week, I told Andrew in the beginning of the season, when I desperately needed a win, he made fun of me. He's like, you go with the Jets, you don't take the Chiefs. And I was like, the Chiefs are terrifying to pick. Don, doesn't it seem like every time you see the scores flash early in the week, the Chiefs are down 10 points? And I'm not saying, maybe they wake up in the playoffs and they just are completely dominant Kansas City and they have the swagger of a champion. And so they get there and they change. But, I mean, they put up 17 against the Falcons. They struggled to beat the Saints. They struggled to beat the Dolphins. They beat the Broncos 22-16. The Bucks by 3. It hasn't been pretty all the time.
Let's take a brief timeout. Take more phone calls. 1-800-919-3776. It's Kay LaGreca-Rosenberg and you on Yes and 98.7 ESPN.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Well, that's awesome.
Looking for more access to the show?
That's right, man.
Check us out on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at TMKS ESPN. This is the Michael K. Show.
We've talked about our new morning show. We're quite proud of it, from 5 to 8 every single day. And it has two great guys and one wondrous guy doing it, DiPietro Canty and Rothenberg. And the wondrous guy is DiPietro, good friend, a friend forever. Once we're not working at the radio station, we'll still be friends. And that, Rick joins us right now. Rick, that's what bothers Don and Peter. They don't understand it.
I don't get it.
But why should they have to understand it?
A relationship like this doesn't need to be understood. It's love at first sight. When I saw that beautiful, long face of yours, I knew this is my guy. They can be jealous if they want. I understand it.
It's just a feeling. We both like each other.
No, we know the feeling. If you want the scientific thing, it's when the blood rushes to the lower extremities. What happens?
Yep. Sorry. No, it's a physical attraction. Now I understand. I didn't understand it before.
Physical
Nothing
attraction.
Else made sense. Rick, thank you. Good luck. Tomorrow we'll talk to you at 5 o'clock.
The Michael K. Show on 98.7 ESPN.
A lot going on today.
I'll say.
Wow. Ricky D. Nobody better.
Well... Yeah, but we'll forget it.
We should have a little segment every couple of days, what we've learned. And Don has learned that he might talk a lot. It finally got through.
Hit the breaking news. Don LaGreca talks a lot off the air.
You know what the lead that was buried with the Andrew story, Peter? Andrew is so good, such a good guy.
Yeah.
His sister is over his house.
I know.
His sister doesn't live where Andrew lives, so it's a trip. So when she comes there, you want to spend every second you can.
Sure.
Andrew didn't pick up the phone from Don and say, Don, I can't talk right now. I'll call you later. He engaged Don, knowing that that's a 35 to 40 minute proposition, and lost that time with his sister. Andrew, why didn't you just not pick the phone up? You saw it said Don LaGreca.
I don't know. Don, I hadn't talked to him over break, so he's
but
calling
your
me.
But sister, you never see her.
Yeah, like what time of day was it? Was Christmas Eve? New Year's Eve?
I don't remember what day it was.
He said it was New Year's Eve.
Yes, it was.
So New Year's Eve at what time?
Don, what would you say? It was probably like 10:30, 11 in the morning.
Oh, in the morning. Okay. Yeah. Okay. That's a reasonable time. But you picked up rather than say, I got to spend time with my sister. And how long did Don start going for?
It wasn't, I don't know. I didn't even think anything of this until you guys are saying it now. It was a normal conversation.
Was it like, an Adam Sandler length movie or like a Judd Apatow movie?
A Sandler. It was Sandler. Okay. This was really a harmless, nice conversation. There was nothing contentious about the way it ended. I just had to go. My sister was leaving.
But it still did end with you having to say, I'm hanging up the phone now.
Yeah, something to that effect. I don't remember the exact words.
That is only used.
A great moment, and it'll never happen again. I am not going to speak off the air.
No.
To you guys again. Because I can't do it. I'm acknowledging I have a problem. Like I said, it's the same with the Doritos.
Right.
I can't stop eating the Doritos. I shut it down. I can't help but talk. So we'll save it for the air.
This is going to be... Like I said, it won't affect me because Don didn't call me for any of the holidays, and I've learned
that's called. Shocking to me. Each holiday, I think I contacted you.
Yeah, and you, Michael actually has reached out a lot to just generally say kind things. And Don, the last time we talked, I called Don, and we chatted for a while. It was very nice, but Don talked about calling Dave on the holidays, calling Rick. He called Andrew. I'm sure he called RJ.
No, I talked to RJ because he wasn't going to be on the show again, and I reached out to Andrew, and that was it. I didn't call you. I didn't call Michael. I called Dave because of the show. It wasn't like I was just reaching out to everyone for the holiday. It's just that I had a moment. I wanted to discuss something with Andrew and wish him a happy holiday.
Mm-hmm.
That's all it was. But you know what? It's cherish those moments.
Because they're
remember
gone.
Them. Keep them.
I just like that I'm hanging up the phone now. The only time that normally gets said is when like a younger person is talking to their elderly parent
who can't
hang up the phone.
I come up
short of that with my mom because I love her so much, but my mom is not a big hang-upper. I don't go, hey, Mom, I'm hanging up now. But the thoughts cross my mind.
That's how I always used to end long phone. Okay, got to go. I'm not that, okay, this phone call is in. All right, got to go. I just got to go.
Right. And
I want to go.
I'm
not mad at anybody because I'm actually happy you guys have told me this. But I fought it for a long time. But as alcoholics say, the moment of clarity was the way Andrew hung up the phone with me. And then that's when I realized, all right, my New Year's resolution has to be, I got to cut this down.
Does Nancy ever say that?
Yes.
You might talk a little bit too much?
Yes.
In what context does Nancy say it?
Well, when I was on, I called into the DCR when they were on. Later in the day, and she heard it, and she's like, "You don't let him talk. You talk too much."
Wow, what a great wife!
That's tremendous. But even that wasn't the moment of clarity. It took Andrew. I'm hanging up the phone now.
Don't scream at me on the show.
Don't defend him. So I appreciate it. It's a turning point.
Wow, this is big. Okay,
not gonna affect the air though. Give me a break. I mean,
no.
Come on.
We need you to talk 70% of the time. The Nets last night. Now, they've gotten off to a rocky start, and Don has brought this up. The Heat got off to a rocky start when the Big Three went there. And then when LeBron went back to Cleveland, they got off to a rocky start. It's hard to incorporate great players and have it just click right away and then throw in the Spencer Dinwiddie injury. He's going to be out the rest of the year. And the whole rotation has got to be changed, what you were working on. And there's a brand-new coach who's never coached in his life. And a whole new staff as well. So I'm not worried about the Nets. Nets are going to be a really, really great team. But something to consider watching. Jared Allen has played great for the Nets. Now, for those that aren't Net fans, Jared Allen's their center, who has a big high fro, and he can play. And the thing that got Kenny Atkinson fired last year is that he started Jared Allen. And you might say, well, why is that a problem? Well, Durant and Kyrie brought in DeAndre Jordan. The Nets gave him a four-year, $40 million contract. Now, I'm not saying DeAndre Jordan's not a good player. He is a good player. But one of the reasons he came in was because those two guys wanted him. Now, that doesn't mean you have to start him right away, but those guys felt that he should start. Kenny Atkinson wanted to play the best player he had, and that was Jared Allen, and that remains the case. I'm not saying that DeAndre Jordan's a bad player. Jared Allen's better. So, what, 8 games into the season, now Steve Nash knows that Jared Allen's better. How will Kyrie and Durant react that their buddy is not starting? Again, it got a coach fired. That's one of the main reasons that he got fired. He didn't even coach Durant. And 20 games that Kyrie played for him, 20. And he got fired. There's no reason Kenny Atkinson should have been fired. They wanted him out. There's no way the GM, Sean Marks, wanted Kenny Atkinson out. They built this together. But the big stars, and I'm not knocking them because that's what stars do, they went up to the owner of the team and said the coach has to go. And now they got Steve Nash, who's really close with Kevin Durant, but Steve Nash is playing Jared Allen. Keep an eye on that. That'll be interesting.
Well, I believe that Steve Nash is there because Kyrie and KD want him there. So whatever those guys want is eventually going to be what is going to happen here. My issue with the Nets, and I've seen a lot of them, and we follow their start, is it a lack of chemistry or is it, you know, when they want to play, they're going to be great, but then it's not going to be every night they're going to want to play, whether it's them taking off or they're just not into it. Nobody's battling for the top seed this year. What good is the top seed? Hey, you're not playing in front of fans, so I don't think anybody's killing themselves to break any records. It's not an 82-game season. It's a 72-game season. I think the Nets know they're a playoff team, and where they finish isn't really going to have an effect on them competing for the championship. I just wonder, when, like last night, when they feel like it, they're going to beat you up. And then there's going to be days where either they're not going to play or they're not going to be into it, and they're going to lose to a team they shouldn't lose to. And their record is going to be reflective of that. Could it just be that? Not chemistry, but just it's hard for them to care every game.
I mean, Kyrie was on a team that won a lot of games. Durant was on a team that won what? They won 73 games, and they ended up losing. So part of being an NBA player is I don't know if I could sign off on that, Don. I know it's hard to keep your focus, especially in these times with all the precautions and the protocols, and there's no crowd to get you up for every single game. That could be an issue. I just think they're still finding their way. I really do. I think that's it.
But, Peter, do you rule out the fact that they know they're making the playoffs? There's going to be some days where they'll turn it on, and some days they'll play in third gear, and that'll be enough, but maybe not enough. Again, there's no if this is an 82-game schedule with fans, you know, you'd feel, I'm going to get pumped up by the crowd. I'm going to want to try to maybe break the record for wins in a season. I'm going to want to make sure I get that one seed so that big game is going to be in Brooklyn. Does any of that matter now? You know, it's a weird year. I'm not killing them for it. I'm just saying I can kind of understand there's probably going to be some nights that it's just, all right, well, it's not our night tonight, guys.
I agree.
Let's not kill ourselves.
Well, and especially right now, they have to rejigger this whole thing. You know, this is not the team that they thought they were playing with. So I think here's the difference, though. This is not a team that can decide to turn it on. Like the way we were talking about the Kansas City Chiefs, I think there's a good chance that when we see the Chiefs next week, they all of a sudden look like the Chiefs of earlier this season and last year. You need to have some history together and be able to gel to be able to go back to that. So I hope that they don't rely on that. We'll turn it on come playoff time because we don't know if they'll have that gear.
Well, I think they'll turn it on before then. But, you know, a game, you know, game number 8 of a 72-game season, you might see something different. I think by the time they get to the final 20 games, they'll play more. They'll be totally into it. And I wouldn't be surprised they rattle off like 18-2 to close out the season and be ready for that postseason. But I think it's less chemistry and just it's in during the COVID era in empty buildings. I just don't know if you're going to be motivated to play 100% every night.
I will tell you this. Flat Earth. I don't want to talk to the media, whatever, and he's talking now. Kyrie Irving is a hell of a player.
No, that was never a debate.
18 first quarter points yesterday. I don't know if Yes showed this already or if they're going to show it. If you get a chance ever, even Don and Peter, he drove the lane and made a behind-the-back pass to Allen, who then dunked the ball. It's one of the most stupendous plays that he was able to get off a pass like that behind the back. Never even looked back. Just knew that Jared Allen was trailing. Brilliant. The guy is one heck of a player. And maybe Nash has to think a little bit about not always having Irving and Durant on the court together all the time. Because, look, Irving was stupendous yesterday. Durant's out with a COVID protocol. Now, obviously, in the fourth quarter in a big game, they have to be together. You want your two best players together. But don't be afraid to split them up every now and then. Have them start together and then kind of, you know, just have them overlap every now. They don't have to be on the floor together all the time. But, boy, Kyrie's good. He is good.
Listen, I mean, he's the second best player in New York right now. You know who number one is.
Austin Rivers?
Julius Randle, baby.
Oh.
Who didn't plan for that? Who didn't have that in their pool this year? 22 points, 11 boards, 7 assists through the first 7. I'm actually interested in Game 8, Don. I feel like sitting down tonight, cracking open a cool adult beverage, and watching the New York Knickerbockers play basketball.
Now, it
may not last. It may not last. But I'm going to enjoy this thing. This is like... imagine the dream it would be if this Knicks team continues to build the right way with this group of young guys they have.
And now you get the Jazz in a second of back-to-backs, right? So, you know, maybe now you're 5-3. Hey, listen, every win's going to matter. I don't think they are a playoff team, but in a 72-game schedule, you know, every win, every moment you're above 500, it's going to be fun. And I would not be surprised, because I know, yes, had sent out the information about how much better the ratings were for the Nets as opposed to the Knicks. That will change if this Knicks team continues to play the way they're playing. I think they went into the season, there wasn't a lot of buzz, and there was more buzz with the Nets. But as things settle in, you know the Knicks fans are out there. And if they feel like they got something to be proud of, man, they're going to be all over that team.
But I'll tell you what, let's give credit where credit is due. Because we talk about constantly how much of a Knicks town this is. Now, granted, it's not surprising. They have superstars in Brooklyn now. But good on the Nets fans for delivering. And the Johnny-come-lately Nets fans. And in this moment, at least, having them be the more popular team. Because that's not off. That's not common. Has that ever been the case? Have the Nets ever outrated the Knicks?
Well, here's the
no,
thing.
No, even when they went to two finals in a row. They didn't.
But the difference between this team and the team with Kidd and Van Horn and Kittles that went to those back-to-back finals. Somebody that's just a basketball fan will watch the Nets. I mean, how do you not when you've got that kind of talent on the court, right? Mm-hmm. Like, there's going to be a reason that just hey, as a basketball fan, like, you know, as a football fan, there's certain you got to watch the Chiefs, right? You got to watch the Packers. There's certain teams you just have to watch because they're so dynamic offensively. You got to want to watch the Nets. So I'm sure I wouldn't be surprised if their national ratings are good. Not because people are fans of the team, but that's just a team to watch. But the Knicks are developing into that. Like, really entertaining. Not the star power, but, you know, New York's glamorous and all that, but New York does fall in love with lunch pail. And if the Knicks can start winning games, even if they're not star-studded, that's still something the Knicks fan base will fall in love with.
No, I think they like a lunch pail sort of team,
yeah.
even if it's not a star-studded team. The Knicks have guys that play hard, and they have a coach that insists that they play hard. And if they don't play hard and they don't play defense, they're not going to play. And I think that's the new Knick way. And that's why I think the coach is the most important addition to this team, although quickly seems like he's going to be a pretty good addition as well. Now, speaking of the Knicks, if you don't get near a TV, boy, you could listen to them right here on 98.7 ESPN.
Wow,
pregame starts at 7 tonight.
Wish it was 6:30. What?
And the game is at 7:30. It'll be at an empty Madison Square Garden. It's still so hard. It's so hard to watch. For some reason, when they played in the bubble, it didn't impact me. Because those games meant a lot. They had their own importance. But a regular season game, there's 72 of them, not 82. Without one person in the stands, it's tough.
Well, and also, they had the time to make the bubble into something with like the big screens and the virtual fans. They did, I think, a really good job to make it a great television product. And, you know, they probably didn't have the time or the wherewithal to do it for all these arenas. So you're playing in an empty arena. It kind of has a feel like those afternoon NCAA tournament games, right? like that noon tip where like there's not that many people in the building. Like it doesn't, there's something missing that you kind of knew with the bubble. Like you said, the games were meaningful. And I think they did something to make it look aesthetically pleasing.
Well, they did. They weren't huge empty arenas. That's not a full size arena, is it? And they're able to set it up and keep, and every game was on a couple of courts. This is needing to get NBA stadiums to look, it's a different aesthetic altogether. You notice it more for sure. I noticed it last year more with the hockey because they were playing in arenas. Yeah, I noticed the dead crowd a bit more, or lack of crowd.
Yeah, I thought about this too, and it's people are going to jump me on this, but I did think about it. So I'm just going to tell you what I thought about. So I've seen a game played at Madison Square Garden. And what's the difference where you play now? Well, why don't they play in their facility in Westchester? Why spend all the money lighting up Madison Square Garden? To get Madison Square Garden ready to roll, and you're not getting any money from fans, why wouldn't they play it at their Westchester facility? It's a court. It's the same court as they have at the Garden.
There's got to be.
I guess there's a rule with the union that, you know, with locker rooms and things like that. But think about it. Why are we wasting electricity in big arenas when there's nobody in the arena? Although some teams do have fans.
I think the biggest thing is there's probably something in the CBA that the road locker room has to be a certain specs.
Right.
And it's possible that the place in Westchester for the road team would not be up to specification.
And they probably don't have the specs for broadcast either, the lights and stuff like that. So that answers my question, but it just seems weird. Why play a Madison Square Garden? It doesn't mean anything. It's a court.
But I guess you got to be ready, because is the hope that at some point they'll be able to open it up?
Well, at some point, but I don't think it's in the near future. I mean, they're making a big hullabaloo with, like, lotteries and stuff like that and testing to get, what, 3,000 people to the Bills game? 3,000.
Yeah. Well, you've already got, like, Dallas has fans in there, right?
Different state.
No, I understand that, but, you know, it's different in New York, but you're judging it by how it's still raging. In some states, they're still finding a way to put a percentage of fans in there. I was talking to Kenny Albert. He called a game in Dallas. It's 30,000 people. At a Cowboy home game, and because the building is so big, but 30,000 people. And you've seen some of these games, guys. They're not all spread out. There's people
definitely
clumped together. Now, you could say, well, they're family members, they're all kind of together, but still, you know, I watched a lot of these college games where it's like, God, it almost looked like the building was almost full.
1-800-919-3776. A lot of people want to talk.
Good.
We got Buddha, we got Chris, Doug, Paul, Ross, Tommy, so many people trying to get in. So many people running up against a busy signal. We'll get to your calls. We want to talk with you.
I want to talk to Buddha, too.
You do?
Oh, yeah.
Buddha from the Bronx.
That's right.
All right, so stick around. Down. That's going to happen. Kay, LaGreca, Rosenberg, and you on Yes at 98.7 ESPN.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Hey, buddy, hey.
Catch the show on demand wherever you want. Just subscribe to us wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
You know, when you're a fan of a team, you don't want to hear anything negative. So I've got a guy on Twitter, E-Money8. Geez, after a great win without KD, you guys talk about the negative about the Nets? Come on. No, we should just talk about hearts and flowers and you know, blow rainbows up their backside. That's what we should do.
No.
You don't think, I mean, Kenny Atkinson got fired because he played Jared Allen as a starter instead of DeAndre Jordan. We're not supposed to address that. I said it was a great win. I said they're going to be a really great team. It's amazing. People want you to be totally a supplicant to their wishes. What? I'm sorry. We're going to point out everything.
It's the same conversation we had earlier with the Bills caller. You know, it's... This is what happens when you're usually considered the other team in town. You hear it from Met fans, Jet fans, is, you know, You know, you don't talk about our team enough, or we're fine. Why do you got to find the negative? You're such a Yankee guy. You're such a Giant guy, or whatever. Just, you got to realize something if you're a Net fan. All right? You're no longer Cinderella. All right? You're no longer the little engine that could. You are now a team, even without KD, that should do what you did last night. Sure. And now you're going to be graded a little bit differently. This isn't, oh, what a great job by a bunch of no-name Nets. This is now one of the teams to beat. And even without Kevin Durant, this is still an outstanding team that has one of the best players in the NBA on it in Kyrie. So you got to get your head out of the old wonderful story. This is what you're supposed to do. This is what you're about. And you're going to be graded at a much different level because it's, I don't know how Net fans feel about it. Championship or bust might be a little bit strong.
But it's finals or bust.
But if this team's not playing in the conference final, Peter.
Yes.
That is a big disappointment.
That's the
line. I
think
they're that good.
I'm not going to go with, who told us this the other day? I'm not going to go with they need to represent the East. I think that's a lot to ask first year. But they should be playing. They should be playing in the conference finals. On paper, they now have more than the Celtics. They have more than the Raptors. The Sixers showed us nothing last year. They should be playing, in theory, it should be Bucks Nets in the final. I am not going to suggest they should beat the Bucks because we already know the Bucks were a good team, though they were nothing against Miami last year. But then they went out and added this year. So they should be able to compete for the conference finals. And people are going to get mad because guess what? There's going to be a much lower bar for the Knicks. And there should be. The Knicks didn't go out and get anyone, much to their detriment, we thought, and maybe still be. May still be the case. And we didn't know what to make of their draft. And so, yeah, there's going to be a lower bar for the Knicks. And get used to it, Nets fans. You guys went out and got Kyrie Irving. You did what the Knicks fans dreamed of. You went out and did it. You have a super team.
I think you're being nice. That can't be cut slack. This is year two of what probably a maximum of 4 years of Kyrie and KD.
That's an interesting way a point in looking.
I mean,
you don't
have a long haul. This is not a rebuild. Boom, they did this to win right now. They signed a guy that wasn't going to play last year and gave him a lot of money not to play and rehab his Achilles because they have essentially 3 years to win a championship. That doesn't mean 2 years from now. That means they're trying to win this year. They think they could win this year. This team is good enough to win this year. And if they don't get to the finals, anything can happen in a short series. But if they don't get to the finals, I think the season is a failure. They didn't put these guys together just to get to the Eastern Conference Finals. They've got to get to the finals.
Well, I understand, and you're entitled to your opinion. I think the Bucks are a more seasoned team. You know, they've been together. I think they want to make up for what happened last year. But, hey, I don't think you'd be shocked if they beat Milwaukee. But if they go seven games, hard fought, you know, lose in Milwaukee in a game seven, I'd be hard-pressed to kill them for it. Get swept and embarrassed, then that'd be a bit of a different story.
Oh, you guys would agree. They essentially lost for the year their fourth best player, right?
The Nets?
Yeah.
So who's their third best?
Karras.
No. I think Dinwiddie.
You think Dinwiddie. Okay, so their third or fourth best player, depending on how you look at it, correct?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's worth note, but I guess we would all agree that if the Lakers last year had lost their third or fourth best player, we still would have expected them to win the championship.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
I'm trying to think. They didn't. The Lakers had losses, but I wouldn't say anyone of that ilk. So, yeah, I mean, this is a team that you should
they
be
lost
able
the,
to...
The guy, I think, who's now with Houston, he lost him right away, but he wasn't one of their top three players. The kid that played with Sacramento, DeMarcus Cousins.
Well, yeah, that was before anything even happened, though.
Right.
So we didn't know who he was yet. We already knew what Spencer Dinwiddie was for this team. So, yeah, I mean, you have the right to have a super high expectation. And the fact is, they lost last year. They knew they wouldn't have KD. They didn't necessarily know that Kyrie Irving wasn't ever going to be able to be on the court for more than three games in a row. But that's what happened. So you're right. They don't have forever to put this thing together.
Let's go to the phones. Let's go to Chris in Long Island. Chris. You know what? I keep forgetting I now have control of the phones. Hello.
Wow.
Chris, what's up?
What's up, fellas?
How you doing?
Okay.
All right.
Oh, well, that was very interesting. Don wanted to talk to Buddha in the Bronx, so let's do it.
What's up, Buddha?
Hey, what's going on, Don? I want to talk to you too, baby. How you doing, man?
Good.
Oh, boy. Listen, I originally had called about the Hall of Fame, and I was on to talk about Calvin Johnson. I felt, you know, similar to like Gale says, his career wasn't the longest, but what you saw told you he definitely was one of the best of all times. But then it had me thinking about what you guys are talking about, you know, with Sam Darnold. And I feel bad for Sam. I feel bad for the fans, too. But you guys got, you know, everybody's got to realize this is over, man. When you look at Calvin Johnson, look how he retired early. When you look at Andrew Luck, look how he retired early. An organization could beat you into submission. And, you know, if I'm Sam Darnold, why in the heck would you want to stay here? Forget about how the fans feel about him. Forget about, you know, all the stuff that's taking place, the bad coaching he's had and all that. Listen, this is your career and this is your life. You get that get-out-of-jail-free card, listen, that might be a good thing for you.
You know? Yeah, because we really haven't talked about that, guys. Don't you think he probably wants to go? I know he said all the right things.
I don't think he wants to go.
Well, I think he wants to see what direction they go into. But
he
didn't know what to coach. But you don't think that he's like in a quiet moment taking a look at Washington's roster, or he's going to watch that game coming up this weekend and say, boy, with that defense, they've got some nice weapons. I wouldn't mind going to play there. Or thinking about other teams just because of what's
happening. Well, it's hard to analyze.
There aren't a lot of players. I mean, Drew Brees is one of them. Who became a star at their second team as a quarterback? Who? Right.
Well, like you said, Jim Plunkett would be one. Steve Young would be another one. You know, there have been players that were able to get out of situations and blossom. I mean, you could talk about Steve Young was a talent, and he certainly was. But if you take a look at his numbers in Tampa on a really bad team, he completed like 50% of his passes and threw for 2,000 yards.
Don, this is a great list for you, by the way.
Yeah. But Michael's right. There isn't a lot.
Not in football. Not with quarterbacks, no. It's really interesting.
Because it's really fairly new, right, guys? That
Rich
you have
Gannon.
The ability to move on. Like in this modern era, Michael... Would the Giants have moved on from Phil Simms after an injury-plagued start to his career?
They might have moved on after Parcells chose Bruner.
Right, because there would have been money coming to Phil. They would have probably had to make a decision, and Phil might have been cut loose and not given that opportunity, you know, 5 years into his career to finally stay healthy and win the job. He probably would have been cast aside. So it's still, like, relatively new that you find yourself in these situations where after 3 years you're cutting bait. With a player, but I think in the right situation, Sam can still be a good quarterback.
Let's go to Ross in Oyster Bay. Ross.
Hey, guys. Happy New Year.
Same to you.
Happy New Year. Really, really. Hope everyone's staying healthy and well. I actually just wanted to say that I want to reiterate a point that Michael made yesterday about the Jets. You know, he's not the all-century quarterback, but if you watch the Clemson-Ohio State game and you watch the way that Fields played, it was electric. And not that he's at all be the end all, but for the Jets, but they should definitely take a look at him. And not only that, you also have to remember that he was injured during that game. He got crushed.
Yeah.
I'm not so sure. Maybe it was the third quarter of that game, and he still came back. I don't know if they gave him a quick cortisone shot or whatever it was, and he was stellar. Stellar. Take care.
All right. He was great. He was great. Right. But remember how bad he was in the Big Ten championship game.
But there you go, right? So, you know, you're talking up how stellar he looked, and meanwhile, 2 weeks before that, I remember you coming on, and I agree with you, Michael. Like, really? This is who's the second? This is the alternative to Trevor Lawrence, so that's how easy it could swing. But you heard Joe Douglas. They make their decisions before those games are played. You know, they're not sitting there making their decision based on how he's going to play in the championship game. You've got to talk, or the interview, or the combine. You've got to collect years of information on a player before you're just like living and dying on one game.
Let's go to Doug in Connecticut. Doug.
Hey, guys. Happy New Year. Glad to have you back.
Nice happy New back. Year to you.
I just want to tell you that you're giving an awful hard time to Don about his $6 million man, Dow. And 48 hours ago, Peter had on his Washington ski hat, and everybody was giving him a hard time about it. And somebody said, look like Gizmo from the Jetsons. And Michael said, That's where the Jetsons lost me, when they had brought Gizmo on. So I guess you thought the show was believable up until that point.
Yeah, see, Doug, thank you for pointing it out. See, that was called sarcasm, because I went on to say I believed the Flintstones with the flying pterodactyls instead of airplanes until, and it wasn't Gizmo, it was Greg Gazoo. So you're trying to catch me in something when I knew exactly what I was doing, setting up a bit. But thanks,
Boomer.
Doug. Okay, Boomer.
Oh, wow. I still don't. Did you follow that, Peter? He lost me.
Well, he's saying that I criticized the $6 million man, that your childhood toy, and Peter, but I actually believed the Flintstones until the Great Gazoo. No, I didn't ever believe the Flintstones. We were talking about jumping the shark, and that made it even more ridiculous that a little spaceman would make himself seen by Fred.
Because in television, you live in the reality that's presented to you. It was prehistoric time, okay? And then they bring in this like Martian character that's jumping the shark.
Wow.
Because in that reality of the Flintstones, it made sense that a pterodactyl's flying and that they're running instead of driving a car. And
right, and the garbage disposal was a little animal that would eat your I believed all of that, Doug.
Because that's the way, ordering ribs at a drive-in and it tips your car over because it's so big.
Oh.
That's the reality. Did the Great Gazoo fit into the Flintstones reality?
No.
That's why it's jumping the shark.
Wow. I'm a little unsettled right now.
I don't know.
You seem very upset.
Andrew's going to be very upset with me. That's something that's got to get screened out.
Well, that's Don, I'm so upset. Peter's already done this. Can you please vote a break? Because I don't have it in me right now.
We need to take a second. More of your calls coming up at 1-800-919-3776. We're going to hear from Spike post-ban coming up. And then,
that's a tease.
As Michael will tell you, there's nothing like the Wednesday, the Hump Day ENN coming up at 6. All on Yes at 98.7 ESPN New York.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast. Hear more of Michael, Don, and Peter live weekday afternoon starting at 2:55 on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
Hey, Alexa, play 98.7 ESPN.